This August, a group of Christians from Canada and the United States traveled to Israel and Palestine to learn more about peace and justice issues in the region. Julia Sandstrom, one of the spiritual directors of the trip, is a Winnipeg pastor and the director of ministry support for the Evangelical Covenant Church of Canada. She joins me now in the studio. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
One of the goals of the trip was to learn more about poverty in the region and its causes, especially in the occupied territories. Can you talk about any disparities that you observed in economic situations and opportunities available to Palestinians versus Israelis?
Sure. The economic occupation is probably as detrimental or more so even than the military occupation from what I observed. The checkpoints prevent Palestinians from freely moving from even places that normally would take maybe 20 minutes to get to by car. They can take up to an hour, 2 hours. So they're limited in their movement simply by checkpoints. Those can be official checkpoints. Those can be just earth mounds that the military has put up to prevent movement. So if you're thinking about getting to work, you're prevented because you can't freely move. Another thing I observed was the water supply. Largely, the water is in the West Bank, and Israel takes it from the West Bank and pumps it into Israel itself, and then sells it back to the Palestinians at a higher rate. So they're limited by their ability to buy their very own water and supply themselves with water. So economically, this hurts them in their ability to farm, simply just daily water usage. From the UN, they say that the average domestic consumption rate for Palestinians living in the West Bank is 70 liters per capita per day, which is actually 30 liters per capita per day lower than the absolute minimum that the World Health Organization recommends. It's actually worse in Gaza. About 90% of the water in Gaza is not consumable. So you can't drink the water, you can't use the water, you can't use it to water your crops. So economically, they continue to have problems because they can't use simple things that we take for granted every day, like water. Also, their use of energy is limited. In Gaza, we spoke to a woman via Skype call. We didn't go into Gaza, but it took her three different tries to find a location where she was able to have internet because there was just power outages. So she needed to find a place where they had a working generator and could hook up to the internet and talk to us. So those are the things that on a regular basis that economically they're hurting because of the policies of Israel.
And when you were in the West Bank, did you notice a difference between the Jewish settlements in the area versus where the Palestinians live?
Yeah, the Jewish settlements, we went through some. We had the freedom to do so. And you just see it's a much wealthier area. In Jerusalem itself, West Jerusalem, you can see there's sidewalks and trash pickup on a regular basis. Whereas when you enter into East Jerusalem, which is more Palestinian, you don't have that. Sidewalks literally stop and trash pickup stops. And so they're not able to have the same quality of life. And then further out into the West Bank, the areas where there are the settlements, you can just tell that clearly water is provided to this region, trash pickup, the general things that we have every day municipally, they don't have in the Palestinian villages.
You visited the Tent of Nations, which is a Palestinian Christian organization in Bethlehem that brings people together to work on reconciliation and peace. And the organization also has farmland that is used for youth agriculture and solidarity projects. Can you talk about the issues faced by Tent of Nations in continuing to use this land?
Sure. So the Tent of Nations is about 100 acres of land up on a hill, and it's surrounded on five sides by settlements. And so you can see from just the top of the hill at the Tent of Nations, settlements on every side surrounding it. There's a roadblock there. We had to stop our bus and walk across the roadblock and about a kilometer to get into the Tent of Nations. But the things they face are regular difficulties being able to get their food that they provide, that they grow there, out, because say there's a roadblock, they can't just truck it out. They have to bring a truck from the other side, unload from their side, load it up into the other side, and move it out. They actually have documentation, and this is what is really interesting about the Tent of Nations. They have documentation from the Ottoman Empire, the British Mandate, their Jordanian rule of the region, and the Israeli government, indicating that this is their land. They have documentation for the last century. but they're still in court fighting for the last 20 years to prove that this is their land, to keep it as their land. And their motto, which I love, is that we refuse to be enemies. So even though the government of Israel is wanting to take their land and build a settlement there because it would then connect the surrounding settlements, they still say, we refuse to be enemies. We want to have reconciliation and are trying to do that through peaceful means.
Was that something you heard a lot or from other Palestinians on your trip? Because I know it was a peace-based trip that you were on. We refuse to be enemies, that message.
Yeah, it certainly was. One pastor we spoke to in a small Palestinian village in the West Bank, he commented that we love Jews, was his, that was his heart. We don't like what Israel does. And so his refusal to hate the people group that represents Israel was really astonishing to me, because on a regular basis, he faces this occupation that harms him and his family and his parishioners. But he says, I love you. I want to reconcile with you, the other party. And I just heard that over and over again from a large group of Palestinians.
You also met with one of the founders of Breaking the Silence, which is a group of former Israeli soldiers who are now speaking out against the military occupation of the Palestinian territories. Can you talk about what you learned about security measures used in Palestine?
Sure. So this particular gentleman, his name is Mika Kurtz, and he founded Breaking the Silence. And his motivation was to get the stories out of the IDF soldiers, the Israeli Defense Forces soldiers. He had served in Hebron, which is, there's an ideological settlement there of about 500 settlers, and it requires 2,000 IDF soldiers. So 4 to 1 are there to protect the settlers. And from his experience, he saw that the settlers were quite aggressive against the Palestinians who lived there in Hebron. And he just kind of had an awakening that this was not right, that they had to protect the aggressors, the settlers who were there throwing rocks. People were leaving the area, leaving their different shops that they have in the old city because of just having to deal every day with the abuses from the settlers. So he started this organization, and it's quite remarkable, the stories that you can read on their website, Breaking the Silence. They have stories of IDF soldiers going into homes in the middle of the night, taking pictures of the children, the men, and they kind of catalog them. And whether or not they actually use the information, we don't know what they do with the information, if it's important to them to have it, but it certainly is a way of intimidating. It lets people know, we're here, we can come into your house at any time, we can take you out of your bed. And so it's a fear-based solution to the problem. And so there's actually about 700 children a year are arrested and taken from their homes in the middle of the night for throwing stones. I wouldn't agree with throwing stones. I wouldn't promote that. But these children are given less rights than a murderer or a rapist would be given in our own country. They're given no human rights, taken out of their own country, which is against international law. So they're taken out of the occupied territories into Israel, given a military court type experience. Their parents aren't there to help them because they have a long process to get approval to leave the occupied territories. And then they can be held for about 3 months. So we met a child that this happened to. And then on Breaking the Silence, they tell stories about having to do these sorts of things.
I wanted to ask you as well about some of the background around the strong support for Israel by some Christian groups, specifically what is sometimes known as Christian Zionism, which I don't think we hear as much about here in Canada as in the United States. What are the beliefs or the ideas of Christian Zionism?
Well, it parallels similar ideas of Zionism, Jewish Zionism, or even a secular Zionism, which is that Jews should return to their homeland, which since 1948 would be the state of Israel. So it promotes that Jews should do that. In Christian Zionism, the difference is that it's out of a theology that links the return of Jews to Israel with the return of Christ. And so it's based on biblical prophecy, or that's the connection that they make, that it's a biblical prophecy. And so when you do that, you can very easily overlook things that the state of Israel does that don't actually line up with the vision that Christ gives of what the kingdom of God should look like. So on the one hand, there's people who would like to see Christ return and bring about biblical prophecy that they read in scripture. But on the other hand, they seem to be, to me, to be ignoring very important points that Jesus Christ represents, such as reconciliation, loving your neighbor, caring for the poor and the widowed, things that Israel, from my experience and my view, are not doing.
So is there any ongoing work that you'll be engaged in now that you've come back? Because I know it was a peace and justice trip, sort of how to take what you've learned and promote it here or to lobby for on these issues?
I think the main thing for me is saying yes to opportunities like this. In my work, I do get to travel a bit throughout Canada and preach at different churches affiliated with our denomination. And so sharing the story, that's what I was really impressed with over and over again, is the people we spoke to, when we asked them, what do you want us to do? They didn't say have huge lofty goals like run for office and change the world that way. They just said, tell our story. Tell people we're here. They feel like they're not seen, that everybody assumes that every Palestinian is a terrorist or is an extremist. And that's just not true. They want people to know we're here. We want peace. And so that's, for me, that's my goal at this point, is to continue to share the story, what I saw.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and sharing it with us today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Julia Sandstrom of the Evangelical Covenant Church of Canada, and you're listening to Mud and Water, mudandwater.org on CKUW 95.9 FM.